Vladimir Zelensky. Schuster was granted unprecedented access to Zelensky, even in the early days of the Russian invasion. His book is called The Showman, Inside the Invasion That Shook the World and Made a Leader. Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
Support for WGTD comes from the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center. ADRC provides free memory screen Mondays for those concerned about memory changes. Call to schedule an appointment. The number is 262-605-6646. Good morning and welcome to this month's Fab Lab 10 a.m. show. Today's special guest is Alessio Carmona from Advanced Tech as we talk about advanced 3D printing. So John, Steve, let's talk some Fab Lab.
Thank you, Scott. This is John Zern. I am coordinator for Gateway Industrial Design Fab Lab.
And I'm Steve Whitmore, instructor with the Construction Sciences programs over at Gateway Tech.
So I get people coming in the lab all the time, and they're like, 3D printing, oh, it's so cool, it's so new. And it's like, yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, wait, no. So it's been around a long time, 1986. One of the things that I've noticed about 3D printing is it's a lot more complicated than people give it credit for. And I did a deep dive over the summer, you know, looking at advanced process in 3D printing, things like metal printing, things like powder bed printing, laser fusion printing, and resin printing. And that's where I met Alessio Carmona, who is with Advanced Tech. Alessio, give us a little background about yourself.
Yeah, how you guys doing? Alessio Carmona, thank you so much for having me, guys. I really appreciate being here. First time on the radio, so if I'm a little nervous, you know, give me a break. But yeah, so 3D printing, you know, I went to MIAD for industrial design. That's where I learned about 3D printing and product development and manufacturing and all those things. So I've been with Advanced Tech here in 2025, and what we are is a channel partner, and we help integrate anybody who wants to utilize 3D printing in an industrial fashion with different types of systems from Stratasys and post-processing equipment. So we delve in all the things that you talked about, from FDM to resin printing to powder bed.
One question for you. For those that don't know what MIAD is, what is MIAD?
Oh, MIAD is the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design in downtown Milwaukee. So we're right there in the Third Ward, and it's an art school, and they also have a very awesome 3D lab and starting to bring in additive. And they have a industrial design department that focuses on product design and development.
So you went to an art school, mm-hmm. and they had a 3D printer.
No, they actually, we did not use 3D printing there, but we learned about all the processes to make products and product development and product manufacturing. Yeah.
That's cool. And what was the onus? Because you think of art school, you think of people just sitting there with a bowl of fruit and drawing little sketching and stuff like that.
Hey,
that's art school.
There too, maybe the occasional
but
pineapple.
So you guys were actually using art for what?
Right. So you know, there's kind of two sides of it. There's the engineering side, and there's the art, or the engineering and the art side. So industrial design kind of melds to and makes beautiful products, right? So when you're looking at it from that perspective, you learn how to draw, you grow up, you learn graphic design and things like that. Well, when you want to start to learn how to make things, like how it's made, that TV show, things like that, that's where an industrial designer comes in. So Milwaukee being an awesome hub for Harley-Davidson, Johnson & Johnson, things like that, you start to look at, well, who's the people behind the magic who come up with the ideas or make it more ergonomic or make it more beautiful or colorful? So that's how industrial design kind of gets into the art school world. So they have a really cool program there that allows, you know, users to, you can take painting classes, sculpture classes, but also focus on industrial design.
Yeah, I think we do see a lot of creativity that comes in at the higher levels of engineering and printing in particular. I have an art degree, and here I am in an engineering world. So we have, I do know a lot of artists that integrate advanced manufacturing into what they do. And we talk about digital art, and we did a show with the Kenosha Museum several years back where we highlighted artists who are using digital process. So even though you think of MIAD as being like an art college, it's amazing that they have programs where they talk industrial design.
But no, and it's also really exciting to hear and find out that when people think about engineering and industrial applications, they think of, oh, it's calculus, it's math, and that's all it is. But there is a creative side to it that is very important to have to make something successful.
Yeah, I think a big part of that is form and function. So when you're talking about the engineering side, yes, there's going to have to be somebody who makes a tool that might have some more mathematical or scientific properties going into foundry work and things like that. But in the end, you also want it to, function correctly and have a beauty and an aesthetic that makes somebody choose it over another product or work better than another product, or the design engineering that goes into why the product looks or functions the way it does.
Yeah, I think aesthetic and design is something that crested with Apple products. I think a lot of times we thought about, the form just follows function. And you'll hear that a lot in architecture. And I think what they're trying to say is form can follow function. But what Apple showed us was that you can design something that looks really good, and a lot of times it helps your engineers really refine and make a product even better. Now, 3D printing, I want to get into a little bit of process here. And what could be more simple than putting material on top of material? If you think of it that way, in the most basic component, all you're doing is depositing material on top of material and then figuring out a way to fuse it. So Steve and I are looking at, can we make a concrete extruder? And they make these things called mud bots, which are basically a large hose which deposits concrete and it moves on three axis. So concrete is a great example of something you wouldn't expect people to 3D print with, but we can 3D print organs. We can 3D print food. Some of the original beds used talcum powder and inkjet, and then you'd soak it in resin to make it harder. So, Alessio, we've discussed, he's been helping me look into metal printers, and this blows my mind that we can 3D print in metal. Because when I first came across 3D printers, I thought, well, we're just using plastic. Can't really make anything with plastic. And I couldn't have been more wrong. Even the plastic has evolved to plastics that can be used with a standard printer, and they can be used in the aerospace and the air industries. So talk a little bit, Alessio, about resin printers and all their versatility. I'm kind of curious.
Yeah. To just touch on metal for a second, that's where you're talking about powder bed and direct metal laser sintering. So we can touch on that when we talk about SAF-style printing. But on the resin side, Stratasys focuses on two different types, and that's their SLA, which is, if you think about a vat of resin and a laser coming down and using UV light to cure the resin. And then there's also the DLP technology, or their P3 technology, which is digital light processing, where they're taking a projector and an LCD screen and they're curing the resin and pulling it out of a vat of resin.
Yeah,
right,
like the onto SLA a machines, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so the SLA is the laser style, and then the DLP is
question for you.
Of
right.
Of resin.
Yeah. No, that's cool. But what's SLA mean?
Stereolithography.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, sorry, I'll use a couple acronyms.
No, it's okay.
Following
along.
There's
like
some definitions. So, that one's been around for a while, and what kind of, you were talking about art and resin and 3D printing,
right.
And there's a lot of different variations out there and a lot of different products. People use it from hobby, they use it to make art, they use it to make sculptures. I see it a lot at the hobby level where people are printing like their favorite characters, whether it's, I don't know, what are some board games and things out there,
right.
You probably see
D&D right?
type and, characters,
yeah,
and things like
characters.
That. Yeah. Whereas we're definitely on that manufacturing industrial level where we're talking about repeatability, we're talking about low to medium volume, those types of things, and being able to just kind of step away and look at different materials, material development, validations, things like that just allow manufacturers, product developers, people who want to maybe step away from traditional manufacturing or tooling and be quicker, mm-hmm. Be able to do product iteration faster, be able to do things that they're just not used to doing in the traditional way, and they want to either have speed to market, different plastic properties, things like that.
I was shocked at how I had misconceptions about what could be made with a 3D printer and how useful it was. So it was really nice. Now, I went up to an open house in Minnesota. It was over the summer, and you were there. And I was seeing stuff printed on an FDM printer that were things like molds for doing injection plastics and molds for vacuum forming. And I was seeing parts that were made in a plastic called Ultim that are just, they're ready to be used directly. So right now, we're at a point in our society where 3D printing is going to start taking over a lot of product in a lot of industry.
Yeah, so you nailed it. You kind of integrated what's happening in FDM with the Origin printer. And you're exactly right. The end-use product it's never going to be a direct replacement in the hundreds of thousands of parts for like resin-based printers. But what Origin does, and comparatively to what you saw in Ultim, which is an aerospace material, a thermoplastic that allows you to have higher heat tolerances and accuracy and things like that, same thing that's happening on the resin-based side is that this equipment is being developed to be able to be faster, to integrate with automatic robots, mm-hmm. Switching out platen heads and being able to print at mid-level production volumes and also make quick iterations because you're not tooling up, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, the Stratasys that we used to have, it was called an Objet, had a head that went over the top of the plate and sprayed resin onto the plate. And then there was an ultraviolet light that came over it to cure the layer shape in the layer. Is that still the sort of technology that's being used in the higher level Stratasys that you were showing me? Because I've seen varying densities, ability to do parts that have different types of material in them. You walk in and there's a table and it's full of food and you pick up the piece of pizza to take a bite, right? It's a nice pepperoni slice. And you realize it's been 3D printed on a resin printer, and they're able to do the color mixing in the resin. They're able to vary the density of the resin, so part of it might be more rigid than the other. Talk a little bit about the evolution of those materials.
Yeah, so that's our PolyJet technology. So that in PolyJet, you're working with digital materials. So you have, opposed to just a black and white or a single material, you have the ability to print these liquid resins and then cure at the same time. So you can mix like a CMYK, a clear, and a model material and be able to not only change the durometer and shore value, you can change the transparency, you can create colors and Pantone accurate printing. So that is where on the product development side, you can see accurate prints of either a part with multiple colors, different durometer of material, all in the same print, allowing product designers and product developers to just really be able to, take their imagination and print it, right?
So let me get this straight. You guys were printing pizzas?
Yeah.
I'm all excited here now.
Yeah, you got to be careful. You can chip your tooth on them. So, so with the PolyJet, you can mix the digital materials to, call out in the software where the pepperoni is, where the cheese is, where the crust is, and you can assign it color values, and you can print it to make realistic.
But those are just plastic models of the real food. You're not into the food
jet. Yeah, we're not doing that whole Back to the Future, like dehydrated, pop it in there. And
because they actually have prototypes now that will print food, which is pretty amazing.
I think, was it meat we talked about? Yeah, the printing meat? I'm not aware of that.
Printing meat.
Yeah. Side of the world,
cell
though.
Cell structure. It's just placing material, if you think about it. So you can search it online. That's what I did, and I found some really great videos. The one that I saw about printing food had a really nice 2-minute introduction where they talked about advanced process, you know, the things that can be printed. And we'll talk about it in a minute, but there's hybrid printing where you come out with a robot arm and a welding torch, and you resin core weld the shape, and then a CNC machine comes over and shapes it and refines the part, which is, you know, there's some pictures of that. But food itself, you know, if you have something that can place structure, cells, you know, that's where we look at organs as well. Mm-hmm. In this video, they said most of us have probably eaten something that was 3D printed and didn't even know it, because once it's cooked, you're not going to know the difference. But, you know, pizza, you lay down a crust. Well, a machine can lay down a crust, right?
Yeah.
You lay down sauce, right? A machine can do that.
I have seen pizza vending machines, but it wasn't quite 3D printing. I don't have to Google that one. I mean, it's all about flavor, right?
As long as it still tastes good, I have no problem with it. But the point is, anything that you can stack up and add, you can 3D print. And now we're at a point where things are going to be different moving forward over the next 10 years about what you buy, where you buy it, how you buy it, and where it's made. And it's a good thing, I think. We do some work with Harley Davidson. I don't know if I'm allowed to say Harley Davidson, but they do Day of Steam. They put a lot into the community, right? So it's great.
Yeah.
We were working with one of their engineers, and we did a 3D printing project there. Harley is now looking at parts, you know, 3D printed. I know you guys probably work with them, and you work with EOS, and we'll talk about them a little bit too. But imagine a motorcycle, right? Most people don't think, well, you can't really print engine parts on a printer. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, well, that's not really true anymore. But when they start out, they're not necessarily going to do a critical failure part. So they're not going to make the piston and the cylinder 3D printed just yet. But the air manifold that covers it, well, now we can get really super complicated. We can metal print it, but it's a part that if something critical happens with the engine, it's not going to destroy the engine or, you know, cause the machine to crash or fail.
You've brought up a couple of times. I'm just really curious on this.
Yeah.
You're talking about metal printing, right? So you have some iron that's like 2,700 degrees Fahrenheit, and you're dropping iron droplets.
27,000.
How does this work? Yeah, so the process on the metal printing side, basically if you can think of a chamber, and what they're doing is they're taking powderized metals. So they're doing like putting it in an ionization to create a very fine powder. And they're dragging that in very thin layers. And as they drag it across, they're laser sintering it to a build platen, a metal plate. And inside that chamber is argon to keep it from, you know, creating fire. And as it pulls across, it lasers it and creates a weldment with almost perfect foundry quality porosity, and allows it to become an end-use part for medical things, for airflow manifolds, things like that. And there's a various amount of materials, from titaniums to nickel alloys, aluminums, coppers, that allow people to just use their imagination and create end-use parts. Yeah.
So what people, if you're not familiar with the 3D printer, it prints 1/130th of an inch, basically, and then drops the bed and prints another one, then drops, and it does this layer stacking.
You got it. Yep.
And so now they're doing that with metals, which is insane. It's like how Star Trek, it seems like.
Yeah.
But the process itself, what I've been amazed at the Fab Lab is that when they get done printing their plastic part, it's actually a usable plastic part. You don't have to assemble anything. It's been printed together, whether it's a wrench or if it's a dragon or whatever. It's all printed and all functional. Is the same thing happening with these metal parts?
Yeah, so in both the Stratasys side and the EOS side, it's a thermally heated chamber. So that's going to give you, as you were saying, you're stacking material, so it's going to allow it to stack in a more uniform, stronger way, and it's also going to give you higher tolerances. So that's the difference. One of the major differences between like a hobby-level printer and an industrial-level printer is the ability to, where it's forged, how it's made, how it's printed, is in these environments that allow it to have better properties.
Yeah, and what Steve's talking about, if you can envision this, think of a linked chain. You can print something like that with a small air gap between the links of the chain, and when you pull it out of the printer, it functions like a normal chain. Sometimes there's small amounts of support material in it, and you can sometimes print like a different material for the support so you can wash it away and make functional stuff.
So quick question. In the news lately, 3D printing has made its way into the news. Is it really possible to 3D print a firearm?
Oh, I saw a headline about that firearm printing. There are customers 3D printing different types of silencers and other things out there. But I guess there is technology where people are starting to, create disposable style weapons with 3D printing. I mean, again, when you look at how 3D printing is evolving into a manufacturable end use part, I guess it could be used for anything, huh?
As long as we can 3D print a Kevlar vest, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, especially with the talk of printing metal printing now.
Even with the carbon fibers, where it's a plastic gun, but it still has the strength of metal. That's where it gets really
scary. There are materials with carbon fill, and those are getting stronger and stronger every day. Yeah, so they're
Where they can handle the exhaust of a bullet.
So we have a couple of Mark Forge printers which lay down a small filament of support material before the plastic. And you can use carbon fiber, you can use Kevlar, you can use fiberglass. And those are rated similar to aluminum. So our CNC guys will come in and they'll use it to make custom jaws to hold parts so that when they go and they're carving parts, they can. But if you think about it, the versatility of 3D printing, when there's a need, we've figured it out. You know, who would have thought we could print with metal? You know, we've come a long way since the chess piece and the little Yoda's head that I always complain about, right? So, and the idea of the hybrid printing, where you're coming in now and you're using robotic welding and then you're using CNC to generate stuff. So if you think about the Navy, so they've got... And this is going to help when we become more of a space culture as well. So they're on the submarine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the propeller cracks. Well, they've got a propeller in the storage closet, so they go get the propeller out. And they go out with divers, and they change out the propeller, and then they come in. Then they go to their metal printer, which happens to be a rosin core welder and a CNC machine, and they make another print so they have another spare ready to go. Instead of having to have 10 propellers in the closet.
Now you're talking about digital inventory.
Interesting.
Which,
okay.
That's a whole nother, idea, right? You don't have to store tooling. You don't have to store extra parts. You store digital inventory. So then you can go to your printer and you can start saying, okay, well, now I need two more of these. So in a day or two, you'll have two new parts. You don't have to order it. You don't have to wait on lead times, things like that.
Right. And I've heard they can deliver a lot quicker. So something like a propeller for a submarine takes a month to get if they go conventionally. And then think about automotive industry. Now you don't have to store automotive parts for cars. You just, like you say, need that three-dimensional model that you can pull up and print.
Yeah, and a lot of that goes back to the conventional manufacturing and having to wait, several weeks for tooling and things like that, even before you can start to make your part to finish it or machine it and do those things. A lot of people are waiting several weeks for that. So depending on if you're doing one of those SLA parts or whatever, you can additively manufacture tooling a lot quicker by just pulling up a file or altering a file or changing a design part.
Now, you've brought it up a couple times between the two of you. I hear this term additive manufacturing, additive engineering. What is this?
So traditional manufacturing would be around like subtractive, so CNC machining.
Where you have a block, you're taking away
material. And you're taking away materials, correct, yeah. So in all of these processes, in one way or another, you're adding material in, so the additive manufacturing.
So subtractive engineering or subtractive manufacturing is more like a guy with a block of marble and he's chiseling out a statue from the block of marble.
Terrific.
That's subtractive engineering or manufacturing. But this additive is where you're placing little blocks down and building like a Lego.
And what John is saying is that it's happening in all different types of forms. So it could be, like I said, powdered metals that are being fused together. It could be droplets that are being added one at a time. It could be FDM or a filament with composite materials mixed in or being layered layer by layer and line by line to create a positive part. Yeah.
No, magic your, sand, remember that stuff, right?
Right. No, in your field, and you be an expert from manufacturing, you talk to all these manufacturers, do you see this additive manufacturing becoming something in the future?
Yeah, that's a great point. That was kind of something I wanted to touch on before the time came up, is that so traditionally it hasn't been looked at as a end-all be-all to producing parts because of material properties, you know, slower throughputs or economics of cost of materials and things like that. But what's happening on like this Origin 2 side of Stratasys and these types of developments is it's allowing companies to be open format for materials. So reducing costs, adding UV properties, VO rated properties,
for durability.
Durability, yeah. End use parts outside, things like that.
Reduction
of post processing. Okay. There's always going to be some of that, which Steve, to you, is like if you have to clean it, cure it, heat cure it, UV cure it, whatever that is. These processes are all becoming faster. So now you still might not be in that high volume, hundreds of thousands of injected molded parts. But you could start to be in the tens of thousands of parts. And we have a windows and door company here in Wisconsin that is printing tens of thousands of parts a year and applying them into their products that are going into hurricane weather conditions. They're going into high heat conditions. And it's allowing them to create faster products and respond to the market quicker with weather disasters or stronger more waterproof parts, things like that, to just have longer life in the field as well.
And in civil engineering and architecture, we have a term called digital twin, which is the electronic model of a building. So you have a building that you build, and you have an electronic model of that same building done in Revit or whatever.
Yep.
And you use that to maintain and keep inventory over your main building. And so that digital twin is a huge cusp of what's going on in our industry right now. With what you're talking about, having a digital inventory of parts where you don't have to have that supply of that warehouse of parts anymore, that would be huge in terms of additive.
Think about it as a shipping term too, right? How hard is it to package something up that might weigh 5 pounds and get it across the pond or down to Mexico or Canada or wherever you need to get it? What if you could just send it in a digital file and they have the same technology you have and then they print it out right there in their office in a day or two, right? How does that help the green footprint? How does that help, you know, those types of speed to market situations or medical situations, right? Like, you know, maybe the file gets shipped to California, they work up a new medical part or print a heart on the PolyJet technology, they work through the model, and then they send it back and they print it in Europe and they show the patient what they need to do or how they need to do it.
Yeah, it sounds like the transporter stuff, from Star Trek all of a sudden. I mean, this is amazing stuff, this additive engineering, additive manufacturing, digital inventory, that's going to be huge in the future.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, Star Trek is a really good example. I was in like first grade when it came out, and they have those things that make the food, right? The replicators.
Mm-hmm.
And they walk up and they go, cheeseburger, and then a cheeseburger comes out. You're like, yeah, right, that's magic. But now you watch the newer incarnations and think about it. If you had a whole storage container full of cheeseburger materials and a printer that could print it, and they now they make their replicators look like 3D printers when they're going. Now, I know we're running a little short on time. I want to thank our guest, Eliseo Carmona. And if you like what you hear, you can reach out to us, fablab@gtc.edu.
What was that email?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, Steve. That was fablab@gtc.edu. Eliseo, I've really enjoyed having you on the show. I'll probably have you back. There's so much we didn't touch on.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about evolving curriculum. How can you learn how to run 3D printers? There's so much in materials as we move forward. So I can't thank you enough for coming out.
Yes,
today.
Thank you, definitely.
Oh, thank you guys so much. This was a pleasure.
Well, thanks to our special guest this morning, Alessio Carmona of Advanced Tech, and to all of our